U.S. officials told Iranian officials to please ignore Trump's posts because he's posting for media consumption only and for his voter base for political purposes. According to Tasnim News, that's what U.S. officials told Iranian officials. And to be honest, that particular piece of information, I believe, because it makes sense. Trump's posts are not meant to be for the diplomats, are definitely not meant to be for people like me and you, because he is all over the place. Today's post, he's talking about joining Abraham's Accords, but he said Gulf countries should join the Abraham's Accords. Saudi just said, no, we're not doing it. Like, nothing's changed for us. So it's very confusing, to say the least. It started off yesterday, before we get into the news today, it started off yesterday that we're on the verge of a deal. Saturday, it was like, it's going to be signed by tomorrow. And then yesterday, we got initially messages from the Iranian side saying, no, there's still disagreements. Trump had a call with Netanyahu. Suddenly, the war in Lebanon is an issue. It's one of the sticking points. And then we had Lindsey Graham and all them start posting online. And now the nuclear program and the Strait of Hormuz fee, sorry, the unfreezing of assets and the Strait of Hormuz fee are the two main bottlenecks along with the war in Lebanon. But it seems as of yesterday, last night, the discussion about a fee in the Strait of Hormuz kind of disappeared, as if it's not a bottleneck anymore. There's an update on that today. And the two last final bottlenecks, according to yesterday's reports from multiple sources all over the place, were the war in Lebanon, especially according to Israeli sources, that's the main sticking point. And the other one, according to American sources and Iranian sources, the unfreezing of assets. That's where we left it yesterday. Before we go into the updates today, what do you make of where we're at so far?
It's really unchanged since this ceasefire began. And there's just always talk and always claims about stuff. And then this tough language keeps being used by president. Then counter tough language being used by president's supporters, say, no deal. Don't make a deal. We need to go finish the job. I mean, that's the one phrase that the President Trump's supporters, it's this odd statement here, his opponents of his supporters are against him making a deal. They say, no, finish the job, et cetera, which just drives me crazy as a military man. And I could go into all kinds of details why that's not even possible. But that they don't care about what's possible. They just care what they want. And so they're putting pressure on President Trump to go against that. Now, I've been told by some folks who have some pretty high level knowledge about what's been going on inside this circle. And they say that these two camps inside the President Trump are pushing him one way and then the other way. I guess there's other folks, and obviously Vice President Vance is the key among these, that says what I'm saying here, there's no military solution. So if you even think you're going to go back there, all you're going to do is deepen the cost for our failure. Don't go down that path. But then in his other ear, that he has all these others you just mentioned there that are screaming, no, we can do it. We just got to hurt him a little bit more, and then they're going to collapse, et cetera. And President Trump seems to be waffling one side or the other. And he seems to be going one direction, and then he'll go back in the other. How can you negotiate with that? That's my problem. I want to be optimistic, but how can the other side negotiate that when it depends on what time of the day and what day for this side?
Yeah, so the information that I have from people I've spoken with, and let me know if it aligns with yours, the people pushing for peace are Vance, Kushner, and Witkoff, to many people's surprise, and the Gulf. They want a deal. Hegseth, Rubio, and Israel want more strikes. That's the information that I have. And these are kind of the two sides. There's multiple sides. And I'm not going to put Lindsey Graham and all them, all the war hawks. Everyone knows their position. They're pretty clear about it. But these are the two main sides kind of pulling a different direction. Is that similar to the information you've been hearing?
I hadn't heard anything about the Witkoff and Kushner. That does surprise me a little bit. But it doesn't surprise me at all about the Gulf areas. I mean, probably nobody wants this war to end any more than they do. Because they want to go back and do business, and they want to get that Gulf back opened up, and they want to get commerce coming in and oil and gas going out so that they can make money, et cetera, and then get the threat of more strikes off the table. So I'm sure that they want it very strongly. And I don't know, maybe Trump was trying to leverage that, by saying, hey, maybe I can sneak the Abraham Accords, and here's the cost of getting that war over with. But, I mean, you just said there about Saudi Arabia. I can't imagine any way that they're going to give in on something so core to what their position has been overall, just because of an angry Truth Social post by President Trump. But the rest of that seems pretty much in line with what I've heard as well.
Yeah. I think it's important to remember on the Kushner and Witkoff side, they do, especially Kushner, he does a lot of business with the Gulf, and they've invested a lot into his funds. So they do have his ear. I know he's close to Netanyahu. He's close to Israel. He's very pro-Israel. But the Gulf also have his ear. So a lot more complicated than kind of being in one camp or the other, because people like Kushner, Witkoff as well, but mainly I know about Kushner, he's got his hands everywhere. So there's a lot of sides pulling him in different directions. But I also think there's pragmatism there as well, because when you look at people like this, I know they care about other countries way too much, and there's a lot of personal interests clouding their judgment. But there's also a part of them that does want America's interests, that have America's interests at heart. Not as much as they should, but it's not like they want to destroy the United States. At least that's how I see it. So therefore, I think they know that military strikes are just a terrible idea. Hexeth, Rubio maybe care less about the damage this could cause the Gulf. Kushner, Witkoff, they understand how important the Gulf is as American allies, especially Kushner. And you know, even the UAE as an Israeli ally. And even Netanyahu is split in different directions. The UAE does not want war. They're very hawkish. They don't want Iran controlling the Strait of Hormuz. But they've been lobbying, and I think Trump in his post today, he mentioned the UAE, Saudi, Qatar, and others as countries lobbying for a deal, wanting a deal. And he mentioned that a few days ago. The Israeli side, Colonel, it is mental what I saw today. Let me find it here. This is crazy. There's a fight between Smotrich, Ben-Gvir, and Netanyahu. Ben-Gvir and Smotrich are saying that they should destroy, Israel should level 10 buildings in Dahiyeh, in Beirut, in Lebanon, for every drone Hezbollah fires. How wild is that? And Netanyahu is like, what are you talking about? That makes no sense. So Netanyahu, this is so crazy that even Netanyahu is like, hey, this is too far. How wild is it that even saying this? And Ben-Gvir did a post today saying, I should have screenshotted it. We should go all out on Lebanon. We should destroy Lebanon. He put a post on today saying that. So just kind of gives you an idea of the pressure that Netanyahu is facing back home. My position is that won't be enough to sabotage the deal. Trump is not going to let the Israelis screw him again. That's my view. It's been my view for a while.
Well,
not many people agree,
problem,
by the way.
From some folks I talked to over the weekend, there could have been a deal this weekend. There would have been a deal this weekend, but Trump listened to the hawkish side and went back on it. Because, look, he's going to have to agree. And you know, you probably saw a lot of the same social media posts I did by various sources in the Middle East, et cetera, that, you know, the general outlines were relatively agreed to. Iran this morning, Baghai has come out and kind of and reiterated that a number of things have been agreed to, but there's those bottlenecks, as you called it, the sticking points that are still there. But there's no question, and everybody needs to be crystal clear on this from the American side, there is no good deal to be had here. We're going to get the best deal that the conditions will permit, and that is absolutely what we should do, because that makes the most sense, given the hole we dug ourselves into by starting this war that should never have started. Once you did that, once Iran took control of the strait, and once they started firing these missiles at all these different targets here, that baked in our losses. And of course, the economic issue with the fertilizer not getting out, aluminum, sulfur, and just obviously oil and gas, and the huge problem that's caused with draining strategic reserves all over the planet, et cetera. It's going to take a long time to dig out of this right now. The absolute worst thing we could do is to deepen those costs by going back into military. So if it's based on logic and ration, then we'll find a deal. But every time we get close, and I'm told there's been at least three genuinely close to issues where we thought we had a deal inside the administration with Iran that we could all live with. Nobody was going to like it, but they could live with it. And Trump undoes it because then he gets the pressure from the hawkish side. So that's the real problem. Will Trump ever have the strength of character to say, all right, shut up, I just made a decision, I don't want to hear any more crap, execute this deal here, get it off the table, and let's move on? He can do that, but will he? I don't know.
Yeah, let me go through the updates that happened, that came in today. So first, we got reports directly from the Iranian administration that they will charge a fee, but they called it something else. Let me see where it is. So Iran is not charging a toll for the strait. Oh, you saw that, yeah?
Yeah, it's not a toll.
Oh, okay. It's an environmental fee of administrative fee. Yeah. So, but that's sure. To allow them to, there's a law of the seas, there's a clause there that doesn't allow the charging of tolls, but it allows them to charge a fee. Let me see where it's, I took a note about it. There it is. So, unclosed Article 26, UNCLOS, Article 26, a coastal state cannot charge a foreign ship merely for passage through the territorial sea or an international strait. It can charge for, quote, specific services rendered, pilotage, navigation, null aid, environmental monitoring. So these are the examples. So in other words, that That's the same what Denmark does in the Danish Straits, what Turkey does in their two straits, and that's what Iran could do in their straits with Oman. And I think this is what's going to happen. I think they're going to be able to do it, and I think Trump will be able to call it something else, like, hey, they're not going to charge a toll. But there's a lot of mines to be cleared. There's a lot of mess to be cleared. So they're going to charge a fee for that to happen just for a period of time and maybe to make up for reparations. So Trump can twist it to something not that significant. And then the Strait of Hormuz, he can call it open and there's just a small fee to pay. I think that will be the new reality.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense because I can't see any chance. I would be shocked more than anything if Iran ever said, you know what, fine, we'll just go back to the status quo ante on the 27th of February. Everything's free and clear. Nobody has anything to do with it. It's just open. I just can't imagine them ever doing that because they have had the power in their hand, and now they see how much leverage that gives them. I mean, sure, they could say, well, you know, we'll go back and do this again if y'all ever do anything sideways, which would be true. But I just can't imagine them letting go. I mean, you've seen all those billboards they have all over Tehran. I can't imagine them go, okay, you know what, just paper those over, just paint them over, and we'll just hand it over. I just can't see it. So, but that one, would you say, makes sense? Because there is some, you can make some correlations between other straits and other waterways in the world that do that kind of thing, that charge a fee. And I imagine that we'll say, okay, sure, a fee. As long as it's not big, who knows what that can be. But, I mean, I think that's plausible. So I think that we could both live with that.
Yeah, and I think Trump could live with that as well. Then the last sticking point is the unfreezing of assets. Iran is saying, we don't trust you guys. We want the assets unfrozen right now. And the Americans are saying, all the different people around Trump, I think Trump wouldn't mind unfreezing the assets. He's a business person. Now, the only issue is that he keeps shitting on Obama, including yesterday. He keeps crapping at Obama for sending the money. And he did the stupid thing of doing it again yesterday. But that makes it harder for him to unfreeze the assets when he just criticized Obama yesterday. Right. He brings it back in people's minds instead of twisting the story. So that one is a bit confusing for me what will happen. That seems to be a pretty significant sticking point.
Yeah, I did. When I saw that too, I just said, man, that's a poison pill, and one wonders if that was an intentional poison pill, because I can tell you, I mean, all over the U.S. media, I see constantly his allies keep throwing that in his face over and over. You don't want to be worse than Obama, do you? Because we will definitely call that out. You've had Lindsey Graham give veiled threats that, hey, any deal has to come through the Senate. So if I don't like it, then it's not going to pass the Senate. We'll see if he actually has to stick for that, or if it ever goes to the Senate at all. The JCPOA didn't. It was just an executive order by Obama, so it doesn't have to go to the Senate. But that just shows that the allies for President Trump are just passionately against anything. It's irrational what this whole group of people is trying to say, but they just don't seem to be capable of being rational. They just want what they want, and they don't care what the evidence or the logic behind it says. They just want to kill everybody and get everything and pretend like they don't have any agency on the other side. And that is what can make empires fall.
Yeah, agree. And I think he's facing a lot of internal threats. I haven't asked you the tough question now, because like me and you have always been on a kind of similar wave throughout this for most of the time. Where are you at now? I'm on the most optimistic I've ever been, but I've had guests again smarter than me that are a lot less, not a lot less optimistic, a lot more pessimistic. They're like, Mario, they want to Hajj and Eid, the two Islamic holidays, to end. And they expect, Larry yesterday said he expects strikes to continue. Others have said similar things. Malcolm Nance agrees with me. That's the only person I can think of that also is optimistic, and the executive director of Human Rights Watch. These are the only two people that are optimistic as well, in terms of not like a great, incredible deal, a permanent end to the war, but some sort of MOU. I don't think there's going to be a great deal. The other option is either strikes or Trump walking away, but he's made it impossible for him, Colonel, to walk away, because he kept saying, if no deal, strikes, if no deal, strikes, if no deal, strikes. He keeps saying that on a daily basis. Then he made it very clear, either no deal or strikes. There's no option of walking away, which is unfortunate.
Well, he's never underestimate President Trump's ability to just say whatever he wants, no matter what he said in the past, and just claim it's not. I mean, he can say, look at this glass of wine I'm holding up. Isn't it great? And he can just say it with a straight face, with no shame or anything else, like I am even saying that out loud. he would have no problem doing that, and he can sell it to his people, and most of them are going to believe it. Hugh Hewitt was on Fox News yesterday and made a really important point, I think. He says what President Trump can't afford to do is lose his base. He said so far they're cool with Midnight Hammer. They're cool with Operation Epic Fury. They're cool with all that. What they're not cool with is prices of gasoline staying a dollar above and then continuing on. He said if he goes into this thing, this like a 60 or a 90 day negotiated settlement where they say we'll stop the war, but we'll try to hammer out these other things, but the blockades don't come off. He said that they can't afford that, and he said he'll lose his base. So he's got to do something to keep his base. And the best way he can do that, the easiest way for him, is to just claim victory, say, I have a deal in place and with whatever terms, and then he'll say, we'll knock out this this nuclear stuff. He can massage that. He can do what I think you're suggesting here, and he can walk away if he wants to. But here's the reason why I have a hard time being optimistic, and we just can't bypass talking about this. It is very clear to me that President Trump has some significant cognitive decline.
Yeah,
and he's doing things that don't make sense, and it's not logical. If this was based on logic, we probably would never have gone into the war in the first place. But once we did and we saw the graphical incapacity of our power with just air power alone to conquer a country as big as much of Western Europe with all these mountains and the underground missile cities and all that, then you would say, all right, well, I want this, but we can't have it. And we will literally slit our own throats if we try again. So let's just put the best face on it and move on. If it was logic, then we would do that and I would feel optimistic. But unfortunately, we're not logic, because he's very emotional. And when you have some cognitive decline, maybe it's not that much, but it's really evident and it's powerful. Because, I'm telling you, from somebody who's a source that I have that says he's got some very high-level knowledge, there has been at least three, and maybe even more than that, deals that were effectively agreed to by the administration and Iran in private, and then Trump himself undid them. So he's the only one that matters here. So if he doesn't come up with something and agree to it, then we're going to be in trouble, and he could make the irrational choice again to go back to war. So I'm just kind of in the I don't know phase right now. I'm not pessimistic or optimistic. It depends on what mood he's in when he gives an order.
Yeah, I think also for me, what that shows is how many parties have influence over the president of the United States. That's what these negotiations have kind of shown me. It's like the president wants to do something, and then he has a call with Netanyahu, things change. He has a meeting with the security cabinet or Lindsey Graham or his donors. We don't know about the calls he has with his donors. Things change.
Yep.
We have a deal. We suddenly don't have a deal. And the Iranians have said it. Reminds me of what Putin said. I'm sure you know the quote. I meet with the president. I make a deal. Then later, guys with black suits come and kind of renegotiate everything from scratch. I'm paraphrasing the quote. But it highlights that there are people within the government. I'm not going down the path of conspiracy, but it's not secret. There's people within the government that have significant influence, and in many ways, the president of the United States, they have their hands tied. I'm not giving excuses for what they're doing. It's just
and going back to adding in the Putin aspect of this. You remember last year when President Trump said, he goes, I thought five times I had a deal with Putin, and he changed his mind and he walked back on it. And Putin's going, what are you talking about? I've never had an agreement with anything other than my June 2024 terms, and you've never agreed to that, so I don't know what he's talking about. Now he says the exact same thing here. He said, five times I thought I'd had a deal with Iran, and then they walked back on it. And they cleft it again. And you've got to be – and Iran says the same thing. They're saying, what are you talking about? There hasn't been a deal that we agreed to, that you agreed to, that we walked away from. We've not changed our terms at all. And so that tells you that's what he thinks, that they walked away from something, when people tell me anyway that it's Trump himself that walked away from it. So I don't know how you make that work with the guy who's pulling the string.
Agree, all the different parties that are pulling the strings. What's your stance on Israel? That's a debate that I've been having. Do you think they have enough influence to sabotage the deal, or do you think Trump could rein in Netanyahu? On one side, Netanyahu needs Trump politically. Trump is extremely popular in Israel, and if Trump criticizes Netanyahu or throws him under the bus, Netanyahu is screwed politically. Some people are saying, Mario, smart people are saying, Mario, Netanyahu has something on Trump. Otherwise, Trump would have thrown him under the bus a while ago, because Netanyahu is a liability to Trump, and Trump is a massive asset to Netanyahu. Trump doesn't need Netanyahu. So there is something more to it. I think what happens next will show whether that's right or not, because if Netanyahu ends up sabotaging the deal in any way, then I would start believing the people that say that Netanyahu or Israel or stick to Netanyahu has dirt on Trump.
Well, just look at how the April ceasefire began, with Trump saying, I told Israel they will not do anything, they will not attack anymore into Lebanon, because that's a necessary agreement that we agreed to have the ceasefire. And then Israel goes in and has their biggest bombing they'd ever had in southern Lebanon up to that point. Like says, yeah, I'm sorry, what was your question again? So he goes in and just does whatever he wants to. And now then this time again,
but then they stop afterwards. Right, so a day or two afterwards, they stop on Beirut. So that was like something at least. Beirut still stopped.
See, only for a little bit. And so they're still doing things around the edges. And they're still, I didn't see if there was any over last night. I was actually traveling, but I know the day before there were still some attacks in there. So
today they attacked heavily. So they're still attacking. There's no ceasefire in Lebanon yet. It's still going on. But the positive thing, so that's why it's like somewhere in the middle, they're not attacking Beirut and it hasn't sabotaged the ceasefire. So Iran is kind of, you know, accepting the current status quo. I'm not saying they'll accept it after a deal is signed, but at least for now they're accepting it. But they haven't struck Beirut, and there's a lot of pressure on Netanyahu. So as
does Beirut have to do? Iran could care less whether it's Beirut or anywhere else in Lebanon. So how does that help?
It's like a partial ceasefire. So they're striking the southern villages. I know you can always go. There's an absolute. There's a full ceasefire or no ceasefire. The scale of the attacks is significantly lower than what it was at the peak of the war. They're leveling buildings back then. Now they're striking villages in the south. I'm not justifying it. It should completely end. But I'm saying at least there was some improvement, some change. People did return to their homes. They did celebrate. But there's no full. It went back to the status quo before the Iran war. You know, they were back and forth between the two, but not striking Beirut. Now there is a lot of pressure, and Ben-Gvir is going at it against Netanyahu. Yahoo saying we should be there. It is. We must. That's Ben Gvir today. We must not normalize the reality of FPVs, the drones. It is time for Netanyahu to bang on Trump's table and inform him that we are returning to war in Lebanon. So he's making it seem like there's no war in Lebanon. We need to cut off the electricity in Lebanon. Animal. Conquer Zahrani. I'm not sure what that is. And return to the high intensity warfare. So that's Ben Gvir for you. And Smotrich saying we should level 10 buildings. For every drone that has ball of fires.
Yeah, like the Nazis did in occupied parts of Europe during World War II. Every time a Nazi soldier got killed, they would execute civilians. So, where'd that come from? We just got to be honest and call that what it is if they do it. That just shows you that the problem that even Netanyahu in his own camp, he's got his own problems inside there. Trump has his own problems. Iran has their own problems. They've got a lot of back and forth between war hawkish IRGC tops and the diplomats who want to reach and negotiate it. Everybody, all three camps have their own internal disputes as well, which is, of course, one of the things that makes it really hard to get this done. You're just going to have some real statesmen who stand up and pound on the desk, not like Ben-Gvir says, but where somebody says, all right, this is it. We're going to have peace and everybody's going to shut up, or you're on your own. Of course, that's what President Trump has the power to do, but he's not using that power. And unfortunately, that feeds into your comment there that a lot of people are saying, does somebody have something on Trump that makes him do things that are self-evidently not in his favor? I don't know. I don't have any information or knowledge about that other than that what we see doesn't line up.
What do you make of the whole Abraham's Accords coming out of nowhere? Is that trying to give something to Israel? So he's trying to say, Netanyahu, look, you know what? I'll try to get you some progress with the Abraham's Accords, but I'm going to end the war in Lebanon. Is that maybe the discussion?
I think that's the most plausible outcome, because otherwise Trump, other than a general desire to, because I want the Nobel Peace Prize and I want to have ushered in the Abraham Accords and bring peace for 5,000 years or some nonsense like that. He wants that. But I don't think that he would just on his own add that in there unless it was necessary to get the Israelis on board, because I can certainly see them saying, all right, we want to keep bombing Lebanon for now and Beirut or wherever. But if we can get Abraham Accords with Saudi Arabia, especially, that would certainly be willing to do that. And then I'm sure in their minds, there's no doubt in my mind that they would say, let's get the Abraham Accord thing. Let's just stop this for a while. Then we'll go back and finish the job when everybody's looking somewhere else or when enough time passes, et cetera. I don't think they're going to ever give up on that. But I could see them saying, hey, but let's get this Abraham Accord, because Israel's wanted that for a long time too. So that seems to be the most logical answer for why he added that in there. Mm-hmm.
I was searching. So Ben Gvir in his message, he said, let's go to Zahrani. Let's enter Lebanon all the way to Zahrani. I'm trying to figure out where Zahrani is. You know how they're talking about entering towards the Latani River and then building a buffer zone or something? Zahrani is 20 kilometers up north of that.
Yeah.
They don't. So, there's never enough for them. It's never enough for them. On the unfreezing of assets, I want to go back to that. Do you think it will happen?
I mean, but for the reasons that you said, I mean, he's undercutting himself, President Trump is, by making those claims about Obama and, his terrible deal. And he gave them plane loads of cash and all this kind of stuff. And I think the number I've seen is like $100 billion. It's not insignificant. Or even if it's some portion of that, it's anything with
the latest report. Yeah, exactly. Latest report is multiple reports is anywhere from 11 to 33 billion. So according to, I don't know who that source is, just came in, $11 billion. That's what came in earlier today. And sources before that yesterday were talking, it initially started with 30, now 20. So in below 30. Let's just stick to that.
Yeah.
What much more than Obama. I don't know what Obama. What
did Obama send them just in the if I'm not mistaken, I think it was 6 billion. I may be wrong on that, but that's in my ear. So whatever the number was, it was some number with a B on it, and it was allegedly plane loads of cash or something. And whether this is just unfreezing it with an electronic transfer kind of thing to where they can just reaccess their bank accounts, who knows, who cares? The bottom line is it would give them cash, which they really, really need because of this blockade and all the sanctions that have been on them anyway. I don't know. I don't know how Trump does it with his base. Because you know that in the United States, the Democrats and all of his opponents will just jump all over it and highlight that to make him look bad, of course.
Yeah.
But I don't know about his base, though. I don't know how they're going to be okay with it. But he's making it hard on himself. I don't know how he does it, but it seems that the Iranian side says that will include it or it be included or there's not going to be a deal. It seems to me that's what where they're at.
Are you worried about a resumption of the war? Do you think that's still a relative possibility, a high possibility?
Every day, because it's not rational. If it was rational, I wouldn't be worried about it at all. But it's not rational. It wasn't rational the first time. And all these people, I'm talking four-star generals, sitting members of the Senate, former cabinet secretaries. I mean, these people are pushing hard to do something that's irrational. It's one thing if I'm telling you that President Trump has cognitive decline and he may not be aware of the consequences of this, but these other guys, they are cognitively aware. They're fully cognizant of what they're saying. And either they're stupid or they don't care about the consequences to our country, to our service members, to all the people in the GCC, all the assets in the region. The Iranian people, obviously, they don't care if they die, but they don't seem to care about anything. Otherwise, there's no rational reason you would argue with that. Therefore, since he's irrational and these people are pushing something that's illogical, I do still worry about it, and I'll worry about it until we have a deal, because any day he could just give the order and launch. And from what I'm told from some of my friends who have direct assets in the region on the front lines of this stuff, they say that they're locked and loaded and have been for 3 or 4 weeks. And any day a war order could come down and they could launch. And so I'm going to stay worried about it until we have a deal and I see people start to redeploy away.
And one last question is about the American bases in the region. There's been a lot of talks about those pulling out. In the deal, it does include the reduction of forces in the region, but I think that's the military buildup that happened afterwards. But when it comes to the bases in the Gulf, there's been a lot of talks about moving them to Israel, moving them completely out of the region, closing up some of these bases. Some of them are damaged anyway. Do you think that's inevitable now?
Nothing's inevitable because there's all kinds of things we could do that says, we can't just walk away, like literally walk away, because then that would give every impression that we left as a result of pressure from Tehran. And that would
say long term, I'd say in the next 5 years, in the next 5 years.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so something like that, though, is possible. I've been an advocate of that for a long time because we don't need those troops there. It does nothing for American national security at all. It's a drain on resources, and it's a strategic point of vulnerability where we could be attacked every day. So I think the whole thing is nonsense. We don't need it. This is no longer 1980 or 1970. We don't need those troops there. We don't need shouldn't have to protect that oil anyway. And as it's evident, we didn't protect anybody or anything anyway. So, yeah, I think that we should leave, and I think that especially depending on who may come into the White House in 2028, I think that there will be some talk about let's do that no matter how this thing gets resolved.